welcome to the Happy Ramp podcast. I am Ted Kluck, joined as always by Barnabas Piper and Ronald J. Martin. And boys, Live in Louisville is rapidly approaching. So I'm sure you've both gotten to that point where you're like figuring out outfits for the show, wardrobe changes, that sort of thing.
Wardrobe malfunctions, possibly.
Oh, wow. Interesting.
Little planned scandal.
Mm. Interesting. A little plan. We've got to have planned scandal
that's
as a part
plandle.
Of it. Plandle. We got to have some plandle. I mean, that's just show business, guys, and that's what we do. So people can look forward to that. They can expect that. Pipe, what's our ticket situation? Do we still have tickets available for Live in Louisville? And if so, how
we
can people
do
get them?
Because I increased the number available using an executive decision and knowing the approximate size of the room. So we were within 3 tickets of sold out of the original number we had said, which is how awesome our listeners are. Yeah. So I've actually increased the number so that any additional listeners can still get tickets. I mean, and I guess at the time this thing goes live, it'll be a week away. So, we're talking last minute decision making, last minute date night, last minute, whatever it is that people want to get in for. There should still be a few.
So we're going to pack them in. We're going to pack it up nice is what we're going to do. We're going to pack it up real nice, boys. Yeah.
Yep.
Good.
Big R, no more small clubs for us, man. No more Roxy for us.
I think we've graduated. I think we're way beyond that. We're not even talking about those kinds of like just trifles anymore. You know,
I'm in discussions with some arenas for next year's Live in Louisville.
Ronnie, you'll never have to play another youth room again.
Oh man, I mean those days are far behind me. Are we thinking Yum Center for?
Okay, yeah, absolutely.
All right,
absolutely.
Yeah.
Pipe, we have another interesting business thing to suss out, and that is the fact that your promo today, our promo, because we all, even though you read them, we all have skin in this game, as it were. We get to promo a book by an author named Jared Wilson, but he's the other Jared Wilson. And I have so many questions on this, but first, at Jared C. Wilson is, I would say a friend of the program, even though I've never spoken with him personally.
If he is not, although he's friendly toward the program, his family definitely is. I had the chance to actually be at his home while I was at a conference in Kansas City.
Yeah.
And his wife and his daughter love the show.
Really?
And so they are, as a family, they are friends of the program.
That's fantastic. What did they say about the show?
Well, he was hosting like 50 or 60 people who were in town for this conference. Uh-huh. And so his wife is an epic party planner, loves to put on basically a fully catered spread, including a large jar of king-size whatchamacallits with a little card in front that said, for Happy Rant listeners, if you don't listen, you should.
Yes.
So, and she told me that that while spending untold hours preparing this impressive spread, she binge-listened to the Happy Rant podcast to catch up on old episodes.
Wow.
So that may also say something about her mental health problems, but
I think it says something about her potential to be brought into the company in some sort of PR marketing capacity.
Is she the official caterer?
I think she's got upper management written all over her.
Thoughts? Yeah, I mean, I can't imagine listening to us talk for untold hours, but it put a smile on her face, and she said it was wonderful, and she loved it and loved the program. So
at Mrs. Jared C. Wilson. I mean, there it is right there, man. At Mrs. C. Jared. Or
that's
at
huge.
Mrs. Jared C. I mean, we can phrase this any way we want. Yeah.
We're actually here to talk about the other Jared Wilson, though, because that's the guy whose book we're promoing. And Pipe, if I wanted to see an image of this young man, how would I find him? If I type
you would need to
Jared Wilson.
It's J-A-R-R-I-D. It's the millennial spelling of
Jared. Oh,
it's
the millennial spelling.
Or like one of the misspellings of Jared that Jared C. regularly posts that Starbucks puts on his coffee.
Oh, Pipe, so I'm looking at this kid. We're looking at a hipster.
Oh, yeah, full on. Oh, I've had lunch with this guy.
This is like incredible. You broke.
Yeah, he's got like the little razor cut
part.
Oh,
he's got the Hitler Youth hair.
White walls.
Big time.
Yeah.
Big time Hitler Youth. So you've broken quinoa with this young man.
Yes. Well, I had a large slab of red meat. I can't recall what he had.
Baby, you sound pumped right now, Big T.
I am pumped.
Man, this is like making your day right now.
Oh, I'm looking at an honest-to-goodness hipster with a hipster name spelling. This is, It's very exciting. So, Pipe, I want to seamlessly transition us into your promo read. So, tell us about Jared J-A-R-R-I-D Wilson and what his project is.
Yeah, so it's a book from Nav Press called Love is Oxygen, and he uses the metaphor of inhaling the love of God and exhaling it, which I thought was actually kind of a cool metaphor. But he draws on his story of overcoming depression, anxiety, and even battling suicidal thoughts, and how reflections and really learning to live in the love of God was a lifesaver for him. And he talks about how how he describes it in terms of oxygen being something that we depend on. So it's basically just a reflection on the love of God as a vital part of life, as something we can't live without, mm-hmm. but not just something we take in, but also something that we then exhale back out. He draws on the idea of perfect love casting out fear and love being life-giving. For people who want to sample this from J-A-R-R-I-D Wilson, Jared Wilson, it's go to loveisoxygen.com. You can download a free chapter there. So that's loveisoxygen.com. That's the gist of the book. I have a question first. When we refer to him as the other Jared Wilson, is that demeaning or is that just a differentiation?
No, I mean, I think all my snarky comments about his appearance are probably more demeaning than referring to him as the other.
Sure, but that's just par for the hipster.
That's just course. What we do to hipsters, to all hipsters.
Right.
I don't know that it's demeaning. And Pipe, I'm looking at this kid, and do you ever run across something and you just go, that's the most saleable thing there is? You know what I mean? Like, this kid walks into your office and you're an exec at what was the name of the publisher again?
Nav Press.
You're a Nav Press exec and you just go, this is it. Like, this is saleable. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, we can put this on a poster.
We can put him on a poster. We can add the words like depression and anxiety, and like, we're going to sell the crap out of this thing.
Is it weird that like, so I'm looking at the people also searched for after I clicked in J-I-A-R-R-I-D, and I'm looking at one Judah Smith, one Stephen Furtick, one Craig Rochelle, and one Levi Lusco. So is this the kind of company that this dude is this the tribe that he runs in? Is that what we're looking at?
When you say kind of company, that sounded a bit like that was a grandparently sort of tone where you're like, oh, this is the kind of company.
Okay, let me rephrase that then, Pipe. Is this the kind of company that he keeps?
Good, Ron. Good.
That was way to rephrase emphasis. Excellent. Whether or not he keeps the company, I would say these are associates of
okay,
his.
Okay, associates. That's a little more up to speed, I guess.
I would have put him more in the Judah Smith, Craig Rochelle category than the Stephen Furtick category, because I didn't know Furtick had associates. Because once one has claimed to be the divine voice, I think you sort of disassociate yourself from others. Isn't that how
I
that
think
works?
I think once your arms get to be a certain...
Nobody can get near enough because you might flex. Right,
exactly.
Pipe, right. If all these guys that Ron mentioned, Jared Wilson kind of rolling with, as it were, if they were all in the movie Goodfellas, which one would Jared Wilson be?
Dude.
Oh, man.
Would he be like the Joe Pesci character? Like Funny How? Like that guy?
No.
He doesn't look funny. He doesn't look funny.
That guy's a loose cannon. That's the beat somebody to death with a baseball bat kind of character. Yeah. That guy's nuts. Granted, that was from the movie Casino.
No, he did that in Goodfellas too, I think. Yeah.
Oh, did he?
Goodness. I think he does that in every movie. Yeah. I think he beats somebody.
It's in his contract.
I feel like there was a hammer involved in one of those.
Every movie I do, I must beat someone with a hammer.
He did that in My Cousin Vinny. He just always has to beat someone with a
Yeah.
Also does it at public speaking engagements.
It's part of the writer. You have to get me someone. You have to get me like a gimp to beat.
Give me a guy. Give me a bat. He did it in like The Princess Bride too.
A 1970s era Easton baseball bat.
I want an Easton baseball bat and a bunch of green M&Ms and some whatchamacallits and a guy to beat to death.
He did it in The Natural too with Robert Redford.
That's true. He beat him with the Natural, the bat. Yeah.
Right.
Oh, I love it.
Right. Yeah. That wasn't the scene where it exploded though. Right. That was a different scene. I don't know. Of all of those guys, he is probably he doesn't lead a ministry that is equal to those other guys in terms of like all those other guys are megachurch pastors. He's more like an online influencer type, which is truly a millennial thing to
say. It says he's a pastor, though. Does he have a church? Or what's this?
Yeah, he's done student ministry. I don't know if he is currently at a church. I think he is. But he moved to Nashville from somewhere on the West Coast to do student college.
Oh, he's the
ministry.
Student college ministry guy. Oh, yeah. Okay, that just brings it all together.
Dude, can you imagine if this guy was like the college ministry guy at your college? Oh my gosh, he'd be a rock star. You know what I mean?
Depends.
I mean,
on
I would have hated him at my college, but that's more about me and my own stuff. But like, you know what I mean? For most people, he would be a rock.
Who did you not hate when you were in college?
Like four people. I could name all of them right now, but I don't want to bore you guys.
Dude, it's just hard to like, it's hard to get behind a guy that writes a book called Jesus Swagger. I mean, I'm just struggling with that right now. That's all I'm telling you, you know?
But I mean, people bought
it. Did they? Was that like a big seller, Pipe?
I don't know that it was a big seller, but it's sold.
I mean, it's like these books that you look at and you go like, I've never met one person that said, hey, man, I just read this fantastic book called Jesus Swagger. Have you read that yet, Big R? Like, I haven't gotten that yet.
That one was aimed at students.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Not aimed at people.
Boys, I've got a question for you about being a man of the cloth. So I may drop this on Big R first, but what I'm going to do here, I'm going to do a little radio that's going to seamlessly transition us from kind of low-key ripping this guy such that we'll probably never get another sponsorship deal from NAF Press. I want to keep that door open from a business standpoint. But I also want to ask...
Oh, it's all in good fun.
It's all in good fun. Always. I want to ask you two gentlemen. Ron, you're a man of the cloth. Pipe, you've done a lot of traveling and speaking. What kind of podium do you think this Jared Wilson uses when he preaches? Taking into account all the different kinds of podiums. We're talking clear glass. We're talking tradish. Yeah. We're talking like rough-hewn hipster wood. What are we looking at podium-wise for this young man?
Okay, so I'm going to roll with that one, Big T. So here's what I would think about Jared W. Wilson, man. Other Jared Wilson is what we're calling him. Yeah. Oh, Jared Wilson.
OJW.
Oh, Jared Wilson. This is kind of what I think about. Oh, Jared Wilson. I think that he's a dude that would want one of those brushed aluminum, like polished
sheet
steel,
metal.
Super thin. Yeah, sheet metal. Like super thin, like, you know, like the one that looks like razor. It almost looks like it's going to tip over, but it's kind of bowed, you know, in the middle. And then it just comes up into this solid, barely wide enough to hold your Bible, because you're probably not putting a Bible on top of it anyway. You're putting like your mini, like, you know, iPad Pro. And so I would guess that. I would say that if he was truly cool, he would just do a music stand, because then he could play off the I don't care-ness. Yeah. Of an Jared Wilson, but I'm guessing he's stainless steel.
Oh, maybe he rolls stainless steel. You know that,
not blue steel, not blue. Stainless steel.
I would guess something a little different though.
All right, throw it out there, Pipe.
I would guess the cafe table. You know, like that standing height table that's like what, a foot and a half, 2 feet across. It's not even a podium. It's something that you set coffee cups on. It's designed to stand next to linger, to have a conversation, because really, isn't that what you're doing with your audience?
Yes.
You're conversing, except they're not really talking back to you. So he would lay out his, whether it's a Bible or notes or his mini iPad. He might even teach off his Apple Watch. Who knows?
Dude, I would love that. Just possible. Like looking at your watch the whole time.
But the other thing is that table allows you to – exactly. I can't wait for this to be over. It allows you to be highly maneuverable, because it's just sort of a base of operations in the middle of this canvas called a stage that you get to paint your narrative on. I'm going with the cafe table.
But the cafe table is so – I don't disagree, Pipe. I'm just saying the cafe table is real – real Anthony Stanley. Mm. You know what I mean? It's real Andrew Stanley, you know?
But isn't he like that with a stool? Like the stool is like mega church pastor. It's like cafe table with stool. But if you just have a little one kind of set off to the side – And then you can just sort of like, you set your things down there and then you move to the center of the stage. And this is like stage
left. It's almost kind of stand-up. So it's not like stand-up comedian vibe is what it is. Like I have this little like round thing there that I never look at, never touch, never put anything on, but it's just up there.
Yeah, I mean, there might be a coffee mug branded with whatever the conference or the church is. There might be a bottle of like Aquafina, but neither of which ever get touched.
Dude, the Aquafina never gets touched. Never.
Dude, I would never drink Aquafina on stage during a talk. Never.
Yeah, the only time you can drink water on stage is if they're transitioning from like your talk to a Q&A. Right. And so like there's some shift going on, you can grab a quick swig. But yeah, never during a talk or if you have like laryngitis. That's acceptable.
It's always there though.
Never.
It's always there.
Hey, just know one thing, boys. We will have Aquafina at Live in Louisville. We will not be taking one drink from it at
Absolutely
any point
not.
In the broadcast.
That's right.
I mean, we will not be touching that water.
I want it there, though. I want a bottle of Aquafina.
Oh, it's going to be there. It's just never. That cap is never, never going to crack open, Big T.
Maybe it can. Are we animals? I mean, come on.
That's what I'm saying. I mean, are we gentlemen?
Yeah. Savages.
Boys, I'm gonna throw you another name, okay? And I want some input on what kind of a podium this gentleman rolls with. The other name is our Jared Wilson, at Jared C. Wilson. What are we looking at there, podium wise, guys? This is another. I don't know if we'd call him like a millennial internet influencer, maybe in a different way. What's his podium situation, Pipe?
Man, I think if he falls asleep at night and dreams of preaching, he dreams of preaching in like some D.L. Moody like 9 foot wide wooden thing that's 12 feet above.
Yes.
Thousands of people stretching off into the distance.
The thing that's kind of like the thing that Catholics use where it's like almost hanging over. It's almost like a...
Yeah, like no spiral staircase, yeah. But like because we don't believe in the Pope.
That's right.
But like the Reformed version of that.
The Reformed version would be very like less ostentatious, but still very ostentatious.
But I think if he was to like... Okay, he's leading a church and they're selecting a pulpit for the stage. He's going to go completely the other direction. And it's like it's like 4 2x12s with a little slab of wood on top. It's basically like it's just like a little stand. And it's
like the little fort you build when you're a kid
and
you're
some boy scout like burned a cross into the front using his little like etching thing. And
like a lathe.
And that's like, that's it. Like it's super simple. It's like unfinished wood because that's, that's what he would select. But when he dreams at night, he wants to be Charles Spurgeon.
Yeah. When he dreams at night, man, he's thinking like, some massive 10x12 London tabernacle. But like, right. If somebody ever approached at Jared C and said, "Hey Jared, man, just for kicks, man, I'm going to come up with a pulpit for you tomorrow." He's going to be like, just grab an ironing board, out of the cupboard. That'll do.
Dude. Yeah. Just string up a couple ironing boards. Cause see, here's the Reformed dilemma, boys. You have to pretend to be humble at all times. You can't show your like ostentatiousness cards in that way. Only when you're celebrating like old dead preachers.
Well, and if not pretending to be humble, you can't show like sheer enjoyment in something. So like if you felt gleeful about stepping up onto stage, so like there's a church in Chicago called the Moody Church, and it has this big like it looks kind of like a chariot racing oval shape. And you preach at one end of it, and then you're like preaching off into the distance. And like you stand in there, you're like, this is a place for an epic preaching. And the podium is this huge wooden thing. Like every preacher who gets in that would be like clapping their hands on the inside and like gleeful. But on the outside, you're like, what?
Yeah.
I'm fine with a music stand. Exactly. I'm fine with
it. Unless you're Ed Stetzer, and then you demand that every single Sunday. Every single Sunday, you demand that.
Funny thing is, he's actually the preaching pastor at that church now.
Absolutely. Absolutes. Eddie,
Big R, what are your thoughts on at Jared C's podium stitch, man? Anything that we haven't sussed out that you think we'd be looking at with our boy at Jared C?
The only thing I can think of, fellas, is that Jared C might pull a quick trick on us and actually come to the table and say, "You know what? If you're going to build me something, I kind of want you to do the Spurgeon with me here."
Okay.
I mean, he might pull a reverse. He might say, "You know what? I'm tired of playing that Reformed humble card. Like, I want to do something grandiose.
Yeah.
I want to make the grand gesture up on stage. Like, I want to do something that feeds into my dream.
He might start that.
That might be bad, Jared C.
I could see that.
That's what I'm saying.
Right. I could actually see that. All right, boys, a couple more names. I'm going to throw another one at you. What about our boy, Robbie B., Rob Bell? Now, he's not preaching anywhere, but when he gets called on to, like, guest preach, what's he looking at podium-wise?
Oh, dude, Robbie B is no podium.
Okay.
Robbie B is like, I need to get like a Velcro, you know, hand attachment onto my iPad Pro because, dude, I'm mobile. It's all about mobility for
he's
Robbie
roaming. B. He's roaming around. He's over the ear with the mic.
You think he's an iPad guy or like he just, he strikes me as the kind of guy who takes like a Moleskine.
Well, he's like no notes.
And writes like seven words.
Yeah.
You know, these are his seven key words that he can riff off of in whatever direction he so chooses. And so he's carrying like it's like a half rolled up soft-sided Moleskine.
Dude, the problem with a pulpit is that it would indicate that he was a pastor and
that's true. He wasn't just
loved
like
Jesus, you know,
a conversation partner.
It would indicate the fact that he had to like open this thing called a Bible and preach from it.
Uh-huh. That's true. Yeah, dude. A podium connotes like things like a Bible resting on a podium.
And preparation.
Right. So if you have no notes and no Bible, why do you need a podium at that point?
You don't need a podium.
It's just decoration.
And a podium is like, and Robbie B's going to play that like, dude, you know, I mean, are we really going to let pulpits and podiums, are we going to let that dictate, you know, who we are in 2017? He's going to be like,
and you can't have that like barrier. That you can't have that barrier between you and the people with whom you're conversing.
Yeah, he's going to be all 19-year-old.
Excellent.
It,
excellent. Know? All right, guys, one more. Yeah. Yeah. This is a name that we invoke weekly on this program. My question is, Rachel Held Evans, if she's speaking at a church, what is she using for a podium? I have thoughts on this one, actually. Do you want to hear them now, or do you want me to say them?
I want to hear your thoughts.
Yeah, I think you need to share your thoughts.
I think it's a man on his knees holding up whatever she's reading from.
is it like a man on all fours with like a lectern?
Yes,
on his back?
That would work too. A lectern on his back, like a wearable, like a lectern backpack.
She actually brings it with her. It's got two little like leather straps.
It's got a couple little leather straps. You can adjust them.
They have sandpaper on the inside,
depending on the size.
And Ted, that man is one Douglas Wilson.
baby.
Only if she is having her dreams come true.
Oh, that's incredible. Yeah, his huge beard is like dangling down. Oh, that's unreal. Oh. Boys, I don't know if we can top that imagery.
No, I think, yeah, I almost want Rachel to Held Evans right after that. That was strong.
You really do.
That
was really strong. Boys, there was some unfinished business from last week's episode. And I have to tell you, I had to think long and hard about this because I don't feel like I judge a lot of people for a lot of things. I'm pretty much like a live and let live kind of guy in terms of how other people roll. But we did a segment last week called what do you silently judge people for? And I didn't say anything. And I think I didn't say anything both as a function of we were running low on time, but also like I didn't know what to say. And I thought about this. I thought long and hard about it. And I came up with two things. And the first thing that I'm going to share is to be fair to me, more from my past. But in the past, I used to just always automatically judge people that had more money than me. Mm. So if someone was like more affluent or better off than me, I would judge them like for being a materialist. and that was a smug, horrible, like douche thing of me to do back in the day.
By your past, do you mean like 20 years ago or like yesterday?
Dude, no, probably like a decade or more ago, okay. I'm thinking. So I'm going to say like early to mid 20s. That was kind of the early to mid 20s aspect of my persona that I'm ashamed of. But I still do it occasionally, Pipe. I'm not going to lie. It's still like,
oh yeah, I can resonate a little bit with that one.
It still rears its head once in a while. Which I'm sure will come as no surprise to the audience. The other one is more common, but it's just like, people Instagramming like pictures of themselves all day. Just the constant sort of self gaze.
It must be really difficult to work with college students all day.
But dude, it is. That's the thing. And that's why I think of it. And, you know, I love my college students and they will even like give voice to how unsatisfying it is to be on social media all day, but they can't stop. So that's what's interesting about it. So that's all I could come up with. Do you guys think that I judge people for other things that I'm not seeing? Like, do I have judgmental blind spots here?
I mean, we're obviously afraid to answer that on the air, Big T. I mean, you know,
I know. I'm
here right now in my soul.
Let the healing begin.
Yeah. So
I'm sure we all judge people for things that we didn't say. I judge Ronnie for his incorrect music opinions that he fired them at me, and then Rachel the Hell Did Evans is on the way out. So
there was no room for healing.
There's no reprisal. So, you know, again, Ronnie and I have talked forgiveness about various things, and this is another one that I'm just gonna have to forgive 70 times 7 for his hatefulness.
Are you guys gonna get together and just talk this out and shed some tears and have there be?
We might do it. We might do it during the broadcast next week.
Let's do it live. Let's do it on stage. That's what I'm saying.
You know.
Absolutely.
We might have to sort this one out. I wonder if there's going to be any like professional counselors, like a Ken Sandy Ministries peacemaker person who can come and help us hash this one out.
Oh man, I hope so. Absolutely. I absolutely hope so.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Boys, I want to talk about another couple of things that are kind of more related to our lives as writers. The first one is, if we could write a regular column in one publication for all time, what would it be? So you get one shot at one column, recurring column for the rest of your life as a writer. What would it be in what publication?
Or if it's easier to answer, what if we change the question to, if you could write a recurring article in any publication at any point in its history? Because like publications have changed a lot.
They but really
like
have.
There
they
were
really
some have. Publications that in like the 60s, 70s, and 80s were, you know, amongst the most influential things out there. So I don't know. What if we
like
broadened the question?
I like broadening the question. I think that works well, Pipe. Absolutely. Let's start with you. You're in the writing business. You read a lot of columns, a lot of columnists. What's your dream column?
The first one that came to mind was Sports Illustrated in its heyday.
Oh,
so
yeah,
like 70s, 80s.
Yep.
But I'm not sure that I would want to write a recurring sports column in that way. Like, that's a little narrow.
Right.
But that was sort of the pinnacle of sports journalism for a long time. I mean, all the best long-form sports writers were there.
I totally.
So I think I would go, like, Vanity Fair in the 60s and 70s.
Interesting.
Because if you go back and you look at some of the – like the best journalists, the best interviewers.
Yeah.
I think Rolling Stone is another one that came to mind. So like interviewers
definitely
and journalists and long form writers who were sort of creative culture thinkers.
Yeah.
Vanity Fair was just like, there was a flood of them that came through there and wrote either for a year or two at a time, or they would sell articles to Vanity Fair. But it was just, it was top notch writing for 20 or 30 years.
Absolutely.
And then, you know, as magazines have have done, it's sort of faded away. But
Pipe, you would have to get used to a ton of like high-end New York literati partying, like just insane blackout partying. I feel like that was a part and parcel with kind of that world back in that era.
Yeah, I mean, it is a name-dropping universe. And I was really only thinking about the writing side of things.
Yeah.
I mean, unless you're like Hunter S. Thompson and you just do whatever you want.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, you pretty much are like, oh, I guess it's cravats and cummerbunds and off we go to another party tonight.
Yeah.
And that, you know, that's not really my scene.
You'd be drinking like $30 martinis with George Plimpton and like playing squash, you know, going to the Hamptons on the weekends.
Right. Oh yes, I ran into one of the Kennedys this weekend. It was
delightful. You're playing touch football with the Kennedys, basically is what you're saying. That's what we're looking at.
Yeah, and tiny little shorts.
Yeah, shorts and a sweater. You'd be in man coverage on JFK back in the day. Interesting.
That sounds mildly appealing.
It does, actually. It does. The Kennedys were attractive people. I mean, I don't know. It would be interesting. Big R, what about for you? What's your dream column?
Boys, I got nothing on this one, man. I mean, I just don't really care.
Big R, man, with a hard take. I love it.
Dude, I just literally don't. I read a bunch of, I probably spend thousands of dollars on magazines, you know, throughout the course of my life. They're all magazines nobody's ever heard of. I don't even care.
They're very
about
hipster
writing,
in that way. Like read. So you.
They're not even hipster. They're not even cool. They're just nobody cares. Nobody buys them.
You wouldn't even want a column in like, you know, Moog Illustrated magazine, like some obscure thing related to your industry.
I mean, all I've ever wanted to do, literally the only thing I've ever wanted to do is like write a devotional in Table Talk magazine. That's my big dream.
Really? Now, what's Table Talk? Lay it on me. I've heard of it.
It's a Ligonier, like, oh, like Ligonier monthly thing. Devotional. Yeah. Yeah, it's like they're.
It's well, baby, I feel like that's devotion. Within your grasp. What do we got to do to make that happen?
I don't know. Somebody needs to make a call to Sproul and just say, hey, Big R from The Rant is interested in writing for Table Tea, and let's get the show on the road. But that's not happening.
I bet Sproul listens to the program. I bet he listens while he's tanning or like smoking a cigarette or whatever.
Right? I don't know.
It help to know that I may know the editor of that magazine?
Whoa. What, Burke Parsons? So
no, like Burke is, he sort of help oversees it. Like the actual like managing editor, the one who to whom one can send submissions for things.
Well, guys, I mean, if you want to make a guy, you know, hard luck guy, you know, guy hard on his luck, you made dreams come true, then, you know, there you go, man. I mean, that'd be the gift. That'd be the gift that just kept on giving for Big R.
I mean, it's not a $30 martini and touch football with the Kennedys, but I'm guessing I can send an email and possibly make an introduction or send you the proper information. I think that...
Guys, I don't have big dreams. I don't have big dreams like this. You guys, man. I just want to write a little devotional and table
tea. Incredible. Man,
That's it?
I love the energy today. Pipe, he could be playing touch football with the Sproul family.
Man, that's an aggressive family. I wouldn't want to play football with them. I feel like touch football turns into tackle real quick there. I mean, RC is he's a little long in the tooth, but he's still got some fire, and it seems to me that his son does as well, Junior.
Okay, so who would win a family touch football tourney on Thanksgiving between the Sproul family, the Piper family, and the MacArthur family?
Whoa! Didn't MacArthur play college football, or am I making that up?
He did.
Okay.
Johnny did. Yeah.
So there's
I used to go to church with one of his sons, and he was sort of like a fit businessman looking guy. So he didn't strike me as terribly intimidating.
Pipe, how athletic are your brothers? What are we looking at there?
There's a range from like, let's call them the academic to the all metro varsity athletes. So there's a bit of a range there, you know. Also, two of my brothers are over 40 now. Mm-hmm. And so there's a strong risk of pulled hamstrings.
Yep.
One of my brothers has 4 kids, meaning there's a strong possibility of all sorts of injuries. Cause I feel like once you have more than 2 kids, I think your risk of injury just grows exponentially.
Absolutely.
But we're also a very competitive family. So
I remember you saying that. That's why I asked it. What do you think? Come on, be honest. I'm asking a football question right now, guys.
I'm the only football player in my family, though. Like my dad enjoyed football, but he's again. Let's say this at this point in their respective lives, I would put my dad up athletically against Sproul for sure, and MacArthur probably. Like,
interesting. That,
so he would toast them. Uh-huh. Then it's a question of the other children in the family. And I think we could hold our own because none of my brothers have let themselves go to overweight or squishy. They all maintain a high level of fitness, or at least a moderate level of fitness.
Yeah.
And I think the competitiveness would come out. And I think we could take those other families.
All right. Well, that's where my money's going on Thanksgiving.
The Piper
family.
Where
all my money's going.
In touch football against, MacArthur and Sproul. I love it, man. I love it. But Big R, that's good journalism. That's just a good question.
That was a good question.
It really was.
Thanks, guys.
It really, really was.
Good.
As far as my dream column, I think my dream column would be anywhere where they don't change a word of what I've written. So anywhere where I have total freedom. And I have to tell you, I've got a pretty sweet column gig. I write for the Jackson Sun, but it's part of the Gannett network. So I think probably a half to two thirds of what I'm writing for The Sun ends up getting picked up and run in like USA Today, which is pretty cool. So I think I may have my dream column in that.
Wow.
Yeah. In that they never change a word of what I'm writing. Here's the kicker though. Like, here's the catch. It sounds too good to be true. And the problem is I still get paid small town column rates, even when the column gets run nationally by USA Today. So there's the rub. The rub is a lot of people might be reading it, but at the end of the day, I'm not getting paid very much. So
that's shocking, Big T. Why is that? Why is there no cachet in the mix for you on that gig?
Baby, there's no cachet because once you write something for one of these like networked papers, it becomes their property. And
they own everything. You're just a slave, man.
Baby, I'm basically I'm just a slave. Yeah.
I'm so sorry.
I know. Yeah. It's tough. I mean, I felt
luckily we have this. You have a way to make a living, and you know, so you don't have to worry.
Yeah, luckily I've got the Happy Rant to fall back on, and so income isn't a problem. You know, money's no issue for me. But
as long as we can keep getting the other Jared Wilson to write books that we can promote.
That's right. Exactly. Hopefully, we haven't alienated anyone on that level. Boys, we got time for one more quick question, and this is one that the listeners like, and it's one that, quite frankly, I enjoy talking about because I'm curious about this as well. About you guys. But the question is, what are we reading? So what are one or two things that each of us are reading that we're really enjoying right now? And Big R, I want to start with you, baby. What are you looking at? What are you reading?
Okay, I'm reading two books right now, neither of which I'm enjoying. They're just the ones I'm reading right now, baby. And the first one is Hillbilly Elegy. I'm finally getting around to that one. That was kind of a bestseller.
You and I were the last two evangelicals on earth who hadn't
seriously
read that.
They haven't so, written. And I've gotten about I'm about halfway through.
But there's still room for more columns about it.
Yeah, we need a think piece.
Yeah, I might do a think piece on it if I ever finish it. I don't think I'm going to because it really just I got about halfway through and it was really bumming me out, so I just kind of stopped. But and then I'm reading a very very straightforward, uninteresting Martin Luther biography.
And, interesting.
Yeah, and that's
is there any biography of any Christian that's not straightforward and boring?
I mean, that's a fair question, Pipe. It really is.
I feel like Christian biographies are by and large the most boring genre of books
because they try to keep it very safe and they don't really give you they kind of do like a cursory overview of the life. And they don't really get into the nitty gritty. And so that's why I'm just kind of going, all right, you know, I feel like I'm learning some things, but nothing that I haven't picked up here and there. But here's what's exciting for me right now, fellas, since you asked, Big T. Right now is the time where I start collecting all of the Christmas novels that I like to enjoy starting mid-November. So I'm starting to build my stack I'm pretty discriminant about it. There's certain authors I like, others that I don't. So I'm collecting right now. So
interesting.
And Advent devotionals. I really love Advent devotionals. So I'm collecting those as well. So there you go.
For you.
How many of those can you read at once?
You know what, Pipe? You read what you read. I read what I read.
No, like, this is a logistical question because most Advent devotionals are like one reading a day for, what is it, 40 days?
I'm just kidding. Yeah, they're usually
25 days, whatever.
They're usually super short. I just like kind of collecting them to have them. So I usually only read like one, but they're usually incredibly short.
You just wrap yourself in them for the feeling of love and warmth and holiday.
The smell of paper.
I take the paper covers off and I tape them all together and that's like my quilt. Every morning as I pick the one that
tear
I
tear one off each day as you count down to Christmas.
Right.
A tapestry of saccharine goodness.
It's a tapestry of saccharine goodness. Absolutely.
Oh, I love it. I love it. That's good stuff. Pipe, what are you reading?
Well, I just finished a book by Dennis Lehane called The Drop.
Okay.
Lehane's probably my favorite like dime store novelist type of writer. So he does almost all his books are set in Boston. So he wrote like Mystic River and what is it? Gone Baby Gone and some others. And they're all, he's a really good writer, but all of his books are just sort of typical crime ones. So I just finished one called The Drop. It was fun. And then I'm reading one called The Goldfinch by Donna Tartt, which is like a critically acclaimed novel maybe a year or two ago. And I will know if I like it by how it ends. which means it's one of those books that I'm like, I like a lot of things about this, but if this doesn't, if she does not land this plane well, that will have been a lot of wasted time. And so it's, you know, I'm getting into like the last 15% of the book and I'm really unsure how it's going to go. So really well written, brilliant characters. We'll see what happens. I'm a little unsure.
Interesting.
And then on Ronnie's recommendation, it's hard to say I'm reading this book because it's not one you just sort of pick up and go through.
Just wrap yourself in it like an Advent devotional?
Yeah, I just soak. I soak in it. I sit on it. I sit it on me. It's a book called The Songs of Jesus by Tim Keller, and it's a daily devotional going through the Psalms. So it's like one page a day. So I don't, at some point I will be reading it, but right now I feel like I've barely scratched the surface on it. So, but it's just a really, you know, it's Keller doing his Keller thing, reflecting on the Psalms. And so it's rich, it's encouraging, and it's concise, and it's, I don't know, I'm really enjoying it. I needed something a little bit more sort of refreshing rather than studious when it came to being in the Word. So I found it really, really good.
And Pipe, I mean, concise is putting it mildly, dude. I mean, if you read as slow as you can, Big T, you get through this thing in like 24 seconds. I mean, it is, it's like Keller's sermons. Like it's so short and like every Psalm is like, oh, wait a minute. I don't even know if that's the real meaning of that, but I would have never thought of that. You know,
dude, can I just take a minute to like sing the praises of Keller on that level for being the only Reformed guy who can say anything quickly?
It's amazing.
None of these guys can do it. The rest of these guys, you ask them like, I don't know how they're doing, and it's an hour. It's an hour and 20 minutes. You ask their name, you know? Well, that's interesting because it reminds me of something. You know,
let me give you my family tree history.
My parents selected this name.
It reminds me of something Karl Barth once wrote about names, you know, nomenclature,
on page 6,000 of his Summa Theologica.
I mean, if you ask Tim Keller his name, you're lucky if he even says Tim.
Dude, you know what he does? He just nods. He just does that head nod thing. Yeah. Right. Okay. Yeah. No, Timmy K's the man. He's incredible for being short-winded. I celebrate that about him.
It's amazing.
It really is. Boys, I'm reading a novel called The Idiot by Alif Batuman. Pipe, are you familiar with this writer? She's a columnist for The New Yorker. I believe, of Hungarian descent, went to Harvard. So the fun thing about this novel, it's all about language and it's all about kind of falling in love in the advent of email. So it's set in like the early to mid 90s, just when email was becoming a thing. And it's probably the cleverest thing I've read fiction-wise since David Foster Wallace. It's really, really clever. It's really...
I was waiting for it.
Yeah.
The Ted Kluck David Foster Wallace drinking game lives on.
Oh, dude, yeah. The man love is never ending. But this is clever in a lot of the same ways. And it's similar in that, you know, I'm like 420 pages into it and still nothing's happened, but I still really like it. So I don't know if anything's going to happen before the end of it, but I kind of don't care. So that's The Idiot, Alif Batuman. I think it was on one of the shows that Ron missed. We've talked about Peace Like a River on the program, right, Pipe?
We have. Okay. Yeah, I don't think Ron was on that one. I don't remember. Yeah. I don't even remember how it came up. Maybe it was just you and I talking off the air. But
one of my favorite authors, by the way, just so I can add my piece to that. Yeah, I love that guy.
Yeah, that guy's incredible. So I read Peace Like a River. I'm not currently reading it anymore. I'm just recommending it to everyone. But I held off on reading this book for like a decade because I was afraid it would be depressing. But I read it and it was probably the most Christian thing I've ever read fiction-wise.
In a not like Christian fiction way.
In a not Christian fiction at all way. No, in just an incredible story way, but in a way that made me want to pray more and be a better dad and like all the things you want.
All the things a good story is supposed to do.
Yeah, to me, he is just the cheat. To me, he is the fiction writer of the last couple decades.
No, you're right, man.
He's amazing.
He's unbelievable. Right. And I loved it in... So for me, Wallace just writes like a wild animal and is the smartest guy in whatever room he's in, and style just leaps off the page. But it is, I think, because Wallace didn't know Christ, it was sort of the resounding gong. Like it was fun to be in and it inspires you as a writer, but there was nothing there to like really grab you on a soul level. But Peace Like a River, man, that one totally did it for me. So I recommend
that. He's like a modern day, what is he, like a modern day Mark Twain? I mean, he's like that. He has that kind of like, I mean, there's like that kind of depth and sort of like vision. It's like, he's just like, it's hard to describe him. He's so good.
Yeah, you know? I get that.
Yeah, it's a little bit like To Kill a Mockingbird.
Yeah. In terms of like much better.
The richness, the depth, the humanity, but also like brilliant phrasing and storytelling. And the fact that he's only written two books.
Absolutely.
Yeah, what was the second book, Pipe? I forget because I read that.
So Young and So Handsome.
Yeah. That was good too.
I might have liked that one a little bit more because it was a little bit more bleak. Huh. But I might have also liked it more simply out of being contrarian because everybody raves about Peace Like a River and justifiably so.
Sure.
But I loved the other one too.
Interesting. No, he's an all-timer. He's an all-time all-timer. So
excellent. Well, boys, this has been a lot of fun. We've covered a lot of ground today. I feel like we accomplished a lot on the program in the pulpit space, in terms of pulpits and in terms of the written word as well. So I want to encourage people, if they haven't done so already, visit happyrantpodcast.com, grab a last minute ticket for Live in Louisville, and also grab a bag of Lagarce Roasters Happy Rant Signature Blend. I believe that we're in the midst of a promotion where the first 15 or so people to buy a bag of coffee will get a signed copy of my adoption book. So there's that. Visit happyrantpodcast.com for all those things. And until next time, Rachel the Held Evans.
The Happy Rant is brought to you by Resonate Recordings. If you go to resonaterecordings.com, you can see the full range of services they offer. So if you're considering starting a podcast, they are the ones we recommend going with. Again, go to resonaterecordings.com to see their prices, to connect with them and ask any questions, and to see what they can do to help you launch, edit, master, and improve your podcast. Again, go to resonaterecordings.com to see what they can do to help you launch and improve your podcast.
A crazy world out there, moms and dads. I'm Catherine Seegers, host of Christian Parent Crazy World, the podcast that tackles tough topics to help you be a godly parent in an ungodly world. Subscribe at lifeaudio.com.